Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I sat there watching when, you know, a bit where I think Jane sees like a zombie mother turn around with her baby. I thought, oh, that's a bit grim. And I thought the makeup was pretty good. When zombies did appear, I thought makeup was on the whole pretty good. And when they got killed off, for me, it was, yeah, they've been killed off in a reasonably exciting way. Maybe not very gruesome way, but I was kind of into that. It may genuinely be that this film had a target audience of one person, and that person is me.
It's you, yes. I believe they found the target audience.
Yeah. Welcome to episode 47. This is Flixwatcher Podcast.
Hello, film fans. Today we are joined by Dave.
Hello. Hello.
Beth.
Hi.
Kobe.
As always.
As always. And today we are reviewing Pride and Prejudice with zombies.
Is it with zombies or and zombies?
It's with, isn't it?
And. Well, it's a plus.
Oh, yeah.
Plus
sign.
Plus zombies.
That doesn't matter.
Pride.
That's plus the
prejudice.
Film we're talking about. You know what it is.
Plus zombies equals fun.
Come find us on Twitter at FlixwatcherPod. Visit the website flixwatcher.tv for full listings, and don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us an awesome review. Hello and welcome to Flixwatcher Podcast. Today we are joined by Dave and Beth. If you would like to say hello to our lovely listeners and tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Yes, hello. My name is David K. Barnes. I'm the creator and head writer of Wooden Overcoats, which is a podcast sitcom about rival funeral directors on a Channel Island.
And I'm Beth Eyre. I play Antigone Funn, who is the mortician in Wooden Overcoats, set on the Channel Island, the fictional Channel Island of Piffling Vale.
Oh, God, no. Sorry, carry on.
I know the story of how you guys started because of obviously Felix and Tom came on the show, and I've listened to all your episodes and stuff. Yeah. But can you give the listeners a bit about how it started? When I first heard the show, I thought a mix of like 6 Feet Under.
it's very much the idea of Felix and Tom said we'd like to do a short film about funeral directors, but that would be really expensive. David, could you write a sitcom? And I said, well, I'll just have a think about that. Wrote down lots of notes and then came up with a script and something like that. And they went, yeah, that'll do. That'd be nice. And so I created the island and the sort of the Antigone and Georgie and the range of residents of Wooden Overcoats, which follows Rudyard Funn, who is a funeral director with his morbid twin sister, Antigone Funn, the mortician. And they're running Funn Funerals together, which is the funeral parlour of choice, being the only funeral parlour of choice on Piffling, until Eric Chapman, who is a terribly, terribly handsome and charismatic individual, opens his own funeral home across the square, and everybody goes, oh, I must get my funeral down there. They go over there, and the funds are now desperately trying to get their business back on track, and we follow them throughout series 1 and 2, and we'll shortly be following them through season 3, which will be, it's getting released right now.
Yeah, it'll be online now. As you hear me saying this right now.
So you should go and listen to it. But
after you've listened to this.
Listen to this first, because we'll tell you at the end where you can find it. And then go to Wooden Overcoats. But the first series, else you won't know what's going on. You'll be really confused.
So, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, yes. David. Yes. Why did you choose this film? And can you tell us what happens?
Well, I chose this film I think the same way that most people choose this film, which is they look at the title and go, yeah, all right then. And then the sort of, I sense this of a slight fear on your part of, we could do good films as well. And so I went, nope, my resolve is now strengthened. I'd not seen it. I'd never seen it before. But I thought, you know what, I've got a feeling it could be quite fun. It isn't a critically acclaimed film, shall we say, but there is something about it. I watched the trailer and I thought that actually looks genuinely quite fun. I want to see, because I'm generally also quite fascinated by these sort of genre mashups and how they work and, you know, that kind of thing.
So like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
It's one I haven't seen, but I'm now going to queue up as one I would like to see. But, you know, these kinds of things I do find intrinsically quite fascinating. Not in a kind of, you know, at university I used to like watching so-called bad films and taking the mickey out of them. But now I like to watch films which might be a bit off the beaten track and a bit different, but genuinely finding what's really fun and really good, you know, what's really interesting about them. And I think there's a lot that's very interesting about this film, which is, as a synopsis, it's Pride and Prejudice. And there are zombies in there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there you are.
That's the plot, really.
Yeah.
Before we, I think we need a bit more of a synopsis.
I think we will.
Are you, as a genre film fan, are you more on the
horror side of the table?
Or are you more on the period drama side? Or is it 50-50? In which case, film is the perfect.
It would be. I would be the single target audience. But no, I think.
there we are.
I think on the whole, it's a. Probably on those, and probably more period drama. I do like a good expensive-looking period drama, with, you know, populated by various veteran character actors doing veteran character acting. In terms of horror, I'm not a massive horror fan. I don't know much about, especially modern horror films. I used to be very much into the old of 1960s of Hammer horror films and the 1930s Universal horror films. I remember when Felix and Tom from Wooden Overcoats were on the show before they did The Woman in Black, which of course is a modern Hammer horror, which I actually really do quite like as a film and indeed as a stage production in the West End. But yeah, this is definitely. I feel rather more comfortable on the period drama side of things. Though it did come to it as a person, I am not a zombie film buff at all, nor am I much of a Jane Austen buff. So I come to this as a total Philistine. And I have to say, enjoyed myself immensely.
I too am a Philistine. I'm going to ask questions about Pride and Prejudice later on in the show. But what happens? Okay, we've got Pride and Prejudice, but why are there zombies in this? Can you get explain
why are there zombies in this?
Do we need to explain it?
Yeah.
I mean, is it?
Okay. There were zombies in this because I believe a very.
I'm not sure it ever gives us an adequate explanation as to why they're there, but they are.
They are there. I think the reason is a highly lucrative book deal, which has managed to turn into a film. I think yes, there is. As you say, there. I don't think there's a particular reason why zombies are there. It's just stated that a plague comes to Britain from abroad, and somehow this turns people into zombies. London has been totally devastated. And they try to build a wall around it, which I think very funny. Actually, great stuff. Yeah, keep them all in there. And meanwhile, the other people around the rest of Britain are trying to continue to lead the lives they led before.
In Hertfordshire, they're cut off by this area called the In Between, which is between London, which is basically done.
Yes.
And Hertfordshire, which is kind of okay, except there are some zombies there.
There are, yes. They're able to be, everybody seems to be...
structurally sound everywhere.
It is. Everywhere they go, there are zombies in carriages and overturning restaurant tables and the rest of it. Mr. Darcy seems to be a zombie hunter. He's taking it upon himself to wander around and
Colonel
try to hunt.
Colonel Darcy,
quite right. And all the women have learnt how to, various ways of fighting, either from Japanese or Chinese methods of martial arts. So they all carry swords and knives. And yet the world is also very much on getting a suitable marriage and ensuring you still have wealth and can continue your properties and ensuring that you can continue your properties whilst fending off the zombie hordes at the same time, which some people might look at this and say doesn't quite hold water as a plot setting. But I would say you are right, but I'm not too fussed. I think it's a very strange genre mashup where I think at some point you say I'm going to accept what you're offering and go with what you with that, and then you go with it head on.
Beth,
we'd love to know.
I guess I am slightly more of a Jane Austen aficionado, I think.
Than David, or just than zombies?
Than David. I mean, I know probably less about older horror than David. I've right. seen some more modern zombie films, not huge amounts, but 28 Days Later and things like that. Mm. And Shaun of the Dead, which I really enjoy. I don't know if other people do, but I guess it's...
What?
Shaun of the Dead.
I think everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, right? And so I think, you know, a zombie film that is scary and is funny isn't necessarily going to be a bad idea. I think Shaun of the Dead has some wonderful moments where there are brilliant shots of people having their middles out that are very memorable.
Yeah.
There's a lot of potential for that to work very well as a thing. So here we have Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which, you know, sounds pretty fun to me. I mean, I grew up with the Andrew Davis Pride and Prejudice, like many people my age, with Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy, and then there's a Keira Knightley film. People love Pride and Prejudice, and I do, but I think, I don't know, as a feminist, you're sort of aware that at the end of the day, and I don't think Jane Austen would disagree, these are about upper middle class people, or maybe lower upper class people, who are basically looking for husbands. And it's about women, and that's great, but it's still about that. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, you think, is the fact that they are all deadly and have swords in their garters maybe going to help with some of the issues that surround that? And so a lot of the scenes, it's the first two-thirds of this film followed Pride and Prejudice pretty closely.
Okay.
And so a lot of the conversations that the sisters have about what they think of the men are, instead of just brushing their hair, they are practicing martial arts on each other and really socking it to each other, which yes. I think is quite good fun. In a way, I think, I can get on board with that. I'd rather watch that than just people brushing their hair and warming about the men. At least there's sort of a mixture going on. So I think it's a film where there's a lot of potential for fun and comedy. And I think the first two-thirds were sort of surprisingly fun. Every time you get romantic moments, you're surprised by something ridiculous that happens. I think towards the end, it slightly goes off the boil a bit.
Yes.
Both in terms of the plot, some of it doesn't quite make sense to me, but also I think because we're sort of there for the fun, because every time something romantic happens, we want somebody to smash a zombie. Some of the more protracted romantic scenes earlier don't really hold the weight that they would in a normal period drama, so you sort of just want the film to end. But earlier,
yes,
there's a lot of fun to be had. It looks great.
Yeah.
There's a cracking cast. Why wouldn't Charles Dance be Mr. Bennett? That's great.
Yes, yeah.
Helen, I know you like a horror. Are you a zombie fan?
I am. I'm a massive fan of the horrors, the zombie subgenre of horror films. Big zombie fan.
Are you a Jane Austen fan?
I really enjoyed Sense and Sensibility. Pride and Prejudice, I don't think I've studied that one, but I'm not adverse to a good kind of Merchant Ivory / period drama.
Yeah. Did you know about Pride and Prejudice before?
I have a confession. I have actually read the book.
Have you?
I have.
Oh, excellent.
Why is that really question? I thought you were going to say something.
Here we go.
Because it differs, I think.
I mean, the book is bloody awful. The concept is it's Pride and Prejudice, except they're kind of zombies roaming around, which...
I mean,
as a one-liner,
yeah,
it works, but for the whole book, it's just like...
Oh, so you've actually read the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies book?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you meant you just read Pride and Prejudice.
No, I've read the book which this film is based on, so I knew exactly what was coming for all of the 1 hour and 48 minutes.
Counted down the minutes.
Film you don't like, emphasise how long it takes to get to
the end. Tell us how you really felt about it.
Who is this film for? It's not for fans of Jane Austen, and as a zombie horror fan, it's not really for fans of horror, I don't think.
I think it's difficult to market this film.
I think they found that as well. I believe it was a massive flop. I mean, not even Charles Dance and Sally Phillips can save horrific miscasting
really
of anyone
that's
else.
A shame, yeah.
I mean, who are these? Who is Mr. Darcy? Who is he with his wimpish, miserable, wimpy voice? And
that's good.
You know, our heroine isn't even particularly remarkable in any way. It's terrible.
Oh no!
let's look at where the cast now is actually quite a strong cast.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In retrospect, by the time Lily James, who went on to Cinderella, she's in Baby Driver, she's also in Darkest Hour, so she's gone on to good things. Sally Phillips, she came from Alan Partridge. I've seen her in this and not seen her in anything else.
She's in Loads.
She's a brilliant Veep.
Yeah.
Sally Phillips is great.
I think she's got a huge TV pedigree. She's done a lot of British TV, so maybe less on the film.
Matt Smith is Doctor Who, and I'll always be Doctor Who.
Yep.
In a very small part, I should add.
Yeah. Duncan Booth. Is it Duncan Booth? He plays not Mr. Darcy, but the other one.
Douglas Booth is Mr. Douglas Bingley.
So he's doing bigger things now. He was in most recently the Limehouse Golem. So a lot of these people, Lena Headey, obviously she's Cersei Lannister. Mm. So there are a lot of people who retrospectively have done are doing quite well.
Yeah.
But then these would have been a lot more minor people in the role. So this is put together.
2006, so it's fairly recent.
Well, that's 12 years ago.
2016.
Sorry.
Oh,
shit.
2016.
Okay.
They started trying to make it 2009.
This is it.
It had protracted production hell.
Yeah, production hell by the sound of it. Yeah. I think Natalie Portman was originally going to be Lizzie Bennet, and she's still involved in the production side of it, but obviously isn't anymore.
Yeah.
Would have been different.
The writer was David O. Russell.
I'm glad she sidestepped that one.
Yeah. No, I mean, David O. Russell did American Hustle, was meant to write and direct it for a while.
Really?
And then went. And then he had a conversation about the budget, which, watching the film, I can quite understand why, because I think it starts beautifully. It looks really beautiful. And the opening credit sequence is wonderful stuff. As the film goes on toward the end, it visibly runs out of budget, quite alarmingly. You know, I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say Pride and Prejudice, any version ends with a wedding scene, but it's probably the worst wedding scene I've ever, because, you know, they clearly don't have a budget for neither actors or a set by that point.
You get Charles Dance to come back.
Charles Dance pops in and out of the film.
I thought I'd finish with this.
Yeah, Charles Dance, they seem to have managed to get him for 2 days and they've used him judiciously, but there are scenes he ought to be and isn't. So the budget does run out quite spectacularly.
But you're right, the opening's fun. They've got this storybook sort of thing where you zoom through it and you come back and you see what London is like now and what's going on.
I like that, yeah.
It's, you know, it's silly. I think the title makes no bones about that. But
yeah.
They sort of open up this world and see what it might be like this way, and Charles Dance is all shut up about them getting married. I want them to be safe. I want them to be trained. He wants his daughters to be fighters. And you think, yeah, fair enough.
We didn't ask you, Philip, with you, Helen, what your... So on the zombie side, so...
I mean, the makeup is reasonably good, but sort of the method of killing is just a bit...
What do you mean?
It's just a bit kind of splattery and a bit kind of CGI and a bit, it's just not very inventive.
Yeah, but I think the standard zombie thing is get the head.
I mean, it's just...
What would be the de rigueur
classic
as a film or TV choice for killing zombies?
We've already talked a little bit about Shaun of the Dead, which kind of reinvigorated kind of, you know, the less serious horror zombie deaths, you know, death by Prince Vinyl is kind of fun. But I don't know, it just felt, it's very formulaic in how they're kind of like killed.
I thought it lacked blood.
I think it's because it's all CGI, isn't it?
It's a 15, so they should be able to pretty much show as much blood as they want to.
But
they didn't.
In America, when it first went out, it was a PG-13.
Right.
I don't know what the history of the ratings was after that, but I think that might explain why.
Yeah.
And maybe that was a poor decision because...
But also, there's not much actual biting.
Is there any biting?
No, there isn't really any biting.
Would you apply that criticism to all films?
Or just this one? I like biting my films. No, but it's...
You're right, actually. Yeah, for a zombie film,
you know, there's sometimes, obviously, biting. That's how people get infected.
Yeah.
And torn apart by zombies is a good one. And then kind of munching around on entrails is always good fun.
Because I thought that about the gore.
It's not really gory.
No, it's not gory. But do you think that detracted from it?
Yes.
Okay. Because that would have attracted more zombie fans to the...
It's not very inventive. It's just not... It's boring. It's just not really inventive. I mean, obviously... They're a little bit limited in the kind of the time scale that they've only really got knives and things. But
Some muskets.
And some muskets.
They shoot a few zombies' heads off.
Muskets.
Blown up.
Yeah.
Blown up.
They're also, they're never actually really a threat. They're just kind of in the background, which is the problem with the book and obviously the fact that it was based on it, that basically just adding zombies to Jane Austen does not make a great story.
I think for me, that's hit the nail on the head there. Because the gore thing, I think you can... I have issues with
trying you're to play. You're not a horror fan.
I'm not
a horror fan,
but I don't mind gore. Gore's not a problem for me. But I have an issue with things like the Hunger Games, where people are being killed horribly so, and you don't see the blood from it. And this, you don't see the blood in here. But I don't think that would have necessarily detracted away from the film. But I think the point where the zombies are just kind of there, but they're not there at the same time, is just odd. And the way the zombies are portrayed, where they can, they're very, very conscious. You don't know who's a zombie for quite a long time. That's what I had perhaps the biggest issue with. And
in terms of like the lifespan of a zombie, it doesn't really work.
Yeah,
you're right. Actually, I think we have a little bit of expositional dialogue early on that sort of wants us to know that every time somebody's infected, it speeds up, and we don't really.
Once they're infected,
but then once they
amazing
human brain.
Thing about. I completely forgot about that terrible subplot about
the church.
He's feeding zombies pig's blood to make them so we can all live happily ever after.
Yeah,
if it's,
that's not in that the zombie Bible.
Weird at the end, actually.
It is. I think there are times when it's trying to do its original plot, and I think that there is a quite interesting. I think you go to a church and hear the zombie folk, and we might try and get things back together, and it's interesting. But then it does feel that particular strand that gets a bit muff. They don't quite know what to do with it, and by the end of the film, the budget's running out of it. But certainly for the first, at least the first half hour, 45 minutes, I must admit, I just found this extremely entertaining, and especially the opening, the pre-credits bit where Darcy rides up on his horse and everything's looking terribly serious. It goes in, lots of society people
are
playing.
They put him in the bizarre
cards.
Machine where they can see if he's been bitten or not.
Oh, yes, and they got the people. Have you been bitten? No, fine. You go through these posh people playing cards, etc. And then he's, I'm here to hunt a zombie.
Takes out his carrion flies.
Yeah, and his flies. And they're that wonderful, the kind of. They're very loud, yes, but you only need to worry when they go silent. And all that entire sort of 3-4 minute segment is very much how a modern episode of Doctor Who would start.
Yeah.
It, very much in that same way. And I think Pride and Prejudice and Zombies in that sense, it almost plays on in that. I was going to say, it is very much a Doctor Who story about the Doctor, but of course it is, because you have Matt Smith wandering around delivering. Certainly, it's a surprising performance. I certainly, in the end, I went, I'm very entertained by this. It's totally weird. But it is very much, it's in that same kind of, we're going to take that and put that together and see what happens. And say it is maybe a joke that sort of wears itself out over time, but certainly for quite a bit at the beginning, I thought actually the dialogue was genuine. I've only recently read Pride and Prejudice, the original novel, actually for the first time very recently, so all the developments are very much in my brain. And watching, I found it was actually quite a witty take in it, potentially a witty take for people who aren't that keen on Pride and Prejudice, the original. But I don't know. I mean, Beth, you're a much bigger fan.
This is where I need to admit, I've never read any Jane Austen books, and I've never seen any Jane Austen films or adaptations apart from Love and Friendship, which is proto Jane Austen, isn't it, which I really enjoyed, but that was very much on the comedy side. So if you guys can illuminate myself and the rest of the listening people who haven't seen Pride and Prejudice, so what happens, that apart from the zombies, how does it deviate from the source?
I suppose Pride and Prejudice very much focuses on these five sisters who are all in need of husbands, mm-hmm. and they have a sensible and protective father and a mother who's obsessed with marrying them off, and two rich men come to the neighbourhood, one of whom is very nice and the other of whom seems to be very hostile and proud but is very rich. And our hero is Lizzie Bennet, who is intelligent and a little bit withdrawn compared to her prettier, more exuberant older sister, and is determined to marry for love or not at all. And it's sort of a story of how her and Mr. Darcy misunderstand each other, because neither of them are the best in social situations, and they're living in a society where it's all about balls and social situations and being very agreeable, and they're not naturally very agreeable. And I think...
So that plays out in this film?
It plays out to some degree. I think we don't get so much of that tension between them in some ways, although the scene where Mr. Darcy eventually proposes to her in a very rude and unexpected way, where he says, even though you have a very disagreeable family and you're much beneath me, I love you. A lot of the dialogue is the same in that scene, mm-hmm. except this time they are fighting each other in this sort of elaborate fight sequence, which I think is quite fun. I think you lose quite a lot of the detail of the book, perhaps because it's a film, not just because it's a zombie film. You don't really get a look in about Lizzie's best friend, Charlotte, who is her confidant throughout, who's very intelligent, and then slightly breaks her heart by marrying the foolish Mr. Collins, but it's because she doesn't feel she really has a choice.
Is that Parson Collins?
Collins, yes. In this, Matt Smith, who's having a lovely time being a ridiculous parson. You also miss out on Mr. Bingley's sisters. So he's the very handsome hero, and he has two kind of evil sisters who plot against all our heroines. And they're barely in this. And I think the bits I enjoy in the film are bits where it sort of is most evil, where we're having a ball and then you end up having to stab somebody through the head. And the idea that Jane goes out and might be infected by a zombie, I feel, is slightly a missed opportunity. And we have five sisters, only two of them are really involved in the plot, maybe three, so maybe one of them could have become a zombie. I think that would have been you might just sail a bit closer to truth.
I think it's what some of the reviews of Agatha, a lot of the ones I read, were very much, well, if you're going to do this, push it even further. And yeah, there is more. I think you can have more fun with it. That said, a lot of the reviews also said that, also pretty much said this is a stupid endeavor in the first place. Why are we bothering? So I think it's in a way that a comedy, I think comedy is always more harshly rated than dramatic films. And I think this is a film that you sort of go to. If you look at the title, you think, I'm going to enjoy that, hopefully, or I won't. If you won't, you just won't go anywhere near it. And if you do, you'll go into it. You might be disappointed or not. As I say, for much of this, I thought, this felt more like a sort of a slice, more of a spoof of Pride and Prejudice for me at least. Even when I'm sort of reading or watching adaptations, there are various points where I must admit I do go, I wish these people could just come to the point a bit quicker, or actually, why are they doing this particular film by having, a sort of monsters there? And a lot of the conversations are shortened. I always get the sense that it's almost like a spoof of that material. It's, why are these people not having a discussion about this? Why aren't they getting married? Well, it's because there's a zombie outside, or somebody's been infected, or they've got to sort of go outside and quickly cut off the tops of trees of their sores to try and practice. And I think things get to the point rather more quickly, and it is a kind of this complete unruffled quality. One reason I genuinely think the comedy for much of this, not all of it, but much of it does work, is because it is played entirely straight.
Yeah.
And I must admit, I found out the performances, especially actually Sam Riley as Darcy, probably not maybe a Darcy for the ages, but in this particular film, I found very funny. I thought his performance was exactly what it needed to be.
So where have we seen Sam Riley from before?
I haven't.
We don't know. Might do some checking. I've heard the name. I can't place.
I did IMDb at the time, but I still don't think he really...
Can we ask one thing you said, Beth, whilst we were doing some Google IMDbing? Is so the kind of Darcy's sister, not Darcy's,
Mr. Bingley's sisters
versus the Bennets. That came across a bit in terms of the Bennets were like, we know the Chinese martial arts, but they were we know the Japanese martial arts. How, is that maybe the only allusion to the differences between them that they really kind of see in this?
Yeah, I think that they're hugely cut. The idea is that the Bingley sisters are better off. I think in this film, we sort of are given to understand that the richer people have learnt the Japanese martial arts, and if you have slightly less money, you've learnt the Chinese martial arts, but everyone has learnt something to protect themselves against zombies. So it is a little bit of one-upmanship that remains. And there is one scene where they're kind of bitches, I suppose, to Lizzie, but mainly they're not really there. They're not really a consistent presence, and I just think make them zombies. I mean, that would be fun, and it would tie it in better.
On the whole, some bits, especially toward the end, notwithstanding, I think it's reasonably well directed. I think a lot of the fight scenes could go further with gore and sort of splatter, etc. But I think I genuinely enjoy. I mean, I'm not a big horror. Sort of horror fan, and also I'm a bit squeamish, I must admit, when I come to say it. So I must admit, I thought, I sat there watching, when a bit where where I think Jane sees like a zombie mother turn around with her baby. I thought, oh, that's a bit grim. And I thought the makeup was pretty good. When zombies did appear, I thought makeup was on the whole pretty good. And when they got killed off, for me, it was, yeah, they've been killed off in a reasonably exciting way, maybe not very gruesome way, but I was kind of into that. So maybe it may genuinely be that this film had a target audience of one person, and that person is me.
It's you, yes. I believe they found the target audience, yeah, eventually. And it's you.
And it was this podcast that brought me to it. But I generally think there is I was looking online to see if general viewers seem to like the film more than critics, and on the whole, it seems that they do. But I think that there is something to it that it's a very strange Venn diagram of people who want a Pride and Prejudice film done not in the way that it might normally be, and a horror film, and wants it to be a comedy as well. It's a very strange. So despite the fact you look and go, well, that's clearly easy to market because of what it is, who are you marketing it to? I think, to be honest, potentially, maybe if I'd see it in the cinema, I'd have gone, oh, blimey. But I think actually somewhere at Netflix.
Spent £12 on that.
£12, yeah. But watching it on Netflix of maybe like so later in the evening with some friends and a bottle of wine, I think it's one of the perfect sort of film for that.
Yeah, this is it. I think it is aimed at Austin fans. I think maybe it's aimed...
Oh, really?
Well, it sticks pretty... for the first two-thirds, it really does stick to the plot. And I don't know why you'd bother with so many characters who are in the book and so many scenes that are in the book if you weren't kind of aiming at that audience, which I don't know if that's a good technique or a bad technique, but I think it's kind of aimed at me in that I'm thinking, yeah, zombies, yeah, Pride and Prejudice. I think for me, it's a better film to see at home on a Sunday, maybe even a hungover Sunday, than in the cinema.
What's the typical demographic of a Jane Austen adaptation fan?
Well, I think it's really interesting because, like, we talk about Jane Austen, but if we think about it, like, the closest kind of mashup of a Jane Austen is obviously Bridget Jones, really.
Yeah.
With Darcy and what's his name, Cleaver, which is obviously what that's lifted from, and that's kind of like the most sort of simplest version of it. And then obviously, kind of, you know, everyone knows Colin Farrell is Darcy.
Colin Firth.
Colin Firth, yeah. Colin Farrell on the brain. So I don't know what the audience... I mean, most the prime audience for Jane Austen is A-level students.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she's still on the curriculum.
Oh, she will be, yeah.
Which one, I'm not sure.
I think it should be aimed more at the zombie people, but it doesn't carry any of the... I can't see people... Because my thoughts of demographic of a Pride and Prejudice adaptation would be an older generation who like that kind of thing, but having zombies at the end of that would not interest them in any way, shape or form. So that for me is saying it's for horror fans who might think it's quite funny to see people in period dress killing zombies, and that doesn't hit the mark in this either. So I think
it did for me. Yeah, it's a problem. I appreciate you could have done rather more, and there is more to. I think it does in a way. It is an odd one in a way that it does kind of benefit from having read the book, because I found quite funny was seeing characters who are a particular way in the book, and like Lady Catherine de Bourgh sort of showing up, and you know, in the book and most adaptations is sort of, you know, old dragon in the corner. In this one, there's very much a character with an eye patch who was able to sort of kill zombies, the most effective anyone else. And I, in and of itself, I saw that and thought, that's quite funny. And I must know, I did laugh. I realised my reputation as a comedy writer might be on the line by saying how much I found this film genuinely very funny. But it might just be that if you're someone who doesn't see that many horror films or zombie films, you see some of this. I took from it very much neither a Pride and Prejudice fan nor a zombie fan, but somebody who just quite wanted to see what would happen, who found it genuinely very funny. I do think the direction and the performances are very witty. I think the script is very witty. I don't think it entirely works, but I think it's sort of why I wanted to watch it. Partly, you know, writing a funereal sitcom, I thought a zombie comedy film would be in keeping.
Hold on, are there zombies in season 3?
Well, you have to listen to find out. No, but you have to listen to find out. But I thought, oh, maybe that would be slightly on brand, as it were. But generally, I wanted to see... Yeah, you know, especially the fact that people weren't so keen. I thought, I want to see what this film is doing. And I genuinely think there's a lot in it that's very witty, it's very funny, that if you have read Pride and Prejudice, or you've seen a few adaptations, at least of the TV series, you do gain something from it. And perhaps a zombie, if you go in it wanting a horror film, you'll be disappointed. But I think if you go in there wanting a period drama done a bit differently, and it might genuinely be context, I don't think it's the best film or comedy film or period comedy film I've ever made, but I think I got from it what I wanted when I was watching it.
The thing is, from what that sounds like, the only reason you find it so witty is because the source that it's based on is so good, and that even in it, its kind of form that, you know, is kind of taken apart, that because it's based obviously on Austen, then it will always have that kind of wittiness. But I don't think that's anything to do with the film. That's just to do with the source material.
I've seen Pride and Prejudice, and I must say, I can certainly say it is witty. I always think there's a difference. I suppose there is a difference between being witty and being funny. I can see that it's a tremendously witty book and a very clever book. I must say, I'm not a Jane Austen fan when it comes to sort of if I want to sit down and read an old timey classical book, I really like Charlotte Bronte, I like Charles Dickens. I'm not really an Austen fan, though I've read a few Austen books. But from this, I generally think it is actually, I must admit, maybe I was very easily pleased, but I generally thought that the dialogue was very funny. I thought it was giving us a funny. And I must admit, from the opening pre-credit scene, I came into it thinking, this is very much like a Doctor Who. This is witches and Shakespearean England. This is a giant wasp attacking Agatha Christie. It's that kind of thing, which I'm very, as a massive Doctor Who fan, I'm very much into.
Again, maybe it's just me and I have seen too many versions of Pride and Prejudice, but going into a new one, knowing what you're going to get almost scene by scene, there is something quite fun about knowing that at any minute, the scenes that you know, even though they kind of look pretty beautiful, even though you still have the balls and the dancers and everyone's wearing lovely costumes, at any moment they're going to get smashed up. And in a way, I like that.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I've done it.
Yeah. And if you want it done immaculately, there obviously are those ones. But if I want to see people, you know, so whipping and sword out and chopping each other up. I think when Mrs. Featherston appeared and then got her head blown off,
that's
and people
horrible.
Went, come on, no,
that's really
pop
nasty.
Back inside for the ball. I thought, yeah, I was quite happy. I sort of knocked back my drink and carried on.
I agree. I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of the Doctor Who kind of thing. I think the problem with a lot of high concept films is that they don't often have the ability to carry the concept all the way through. And I think this as a Doctor Who episode,
yes,
would might have worked.
45 would have worked. Minutes an hour.
Because yeah. I did enjoy it. I liked. I have issues with how the zombies worked in this. I have issues with the fighting. I think they could have done it just done it better. But the overall idea, I was with it. Like I said, up until it just went. It's still going on, and I'm not sure where they're going with this anymore.
I think an hour of this film is pretty damn perfect, and as it went on toward the end, when it actually deviates substantially from the book, most of the Mr. Wickham stuff doesn't quite hold water. That plot actually gets very, very confused, and his fight with Darcy that's a bit where it looks as if they've only got a day to film it, and so they've got two shots and they use them. But there is a lot. I did really enjoy Lizzie. Her sort of journey through it as a badass zombie killer. I generally thought it was very entertaining for an hour of it. Well, you kind of want at that point maybe something else to come in. And if this were Doctor Who, there's of course where Doctor Who would come in, not playing a parson, but coming and resolve the situation in a different way. So I think it's aching for something else to leap it that extra level to in the last 45 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But I must say, for the first 45 minutes, an hour, I was really, really with this film.
Well, let's tie that into the scores.
The Spreadsheet of Dreams.
As it's now been named. So, David, as you chose the film, can you lead us off with the scores? And with that, it's the recommendability scores.
Would I recommend Pride and Prejudice and Zombies with a straight face? If you sit down and say, show me one of the masterpieces of cinema, show me something that's going to change the way I view the world, I wouldn't choose this film. But I'm going to go with a three, I must admit. I'm going to say, I think this film sets out its stall, says this is what we're doing, and I think does it reasonably well. If you don't want that, then I'd say, maybe turn it off. But I'm going to say three stars. I think if somebody says Pride and Prejudice Zombies, I think I know what that is. Is it what it is? I'll go, yes, that's what it is. And they go, good. They'll put it down or they'll watch it. And on the basis of that, I think it's a good three.
Beth?
Yeah, I'm also going to go with three. It's a ridiculous film, but I enjoyed aspects of it. And also, based on the reviews, it was better than I thought it would be. I was sort of thinking people, I think people really have turned against this film, and it's not a perfect film, but it's fun and it does what it says on the tin pretty well.
Three, Helen.
I mean, for this coming from the source material of having read the version with the zombies,
oh, yes, the actual.
Expectations were very low and
met.
Yeah. I'm please no, don't. I mean, yeah, don't waste.
Is it written in the same tonality as Jane Austen?
But then, yeah, it's. I mean, it's what the film is.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to.
You can pick it up in many charity shops, I can assure you.
Don't go to charity shops, go to Netflix. Yeah. I mean the book. So.
Yeah, yeah, you can get the book in. I'm sure they've got at least three copies of it. So I'm going to give it a one, which is a lot higher than I was coming in, having heard how much you did quite enjoy it. So I think if you've listen to the argument for it and you think you might go ahead with it, then do, but don't.
I think that's as fair. If I've made it sound quite fun and you're convinced by what I've said, you'll probably like it.
Yeah.
If you've a shred of decency and you've decided to go for another. But no, I generally think it's...
You should definitely stick with yours.
I think it's a lot of fun. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not going to die on this hill, but I am going to... I'm going to say, yeah,
like
good fun.
Die on this hill. Yeah. I'm going to give it 2.6.
That's very precise.
I like the 0.6 there. I think you're exactly right in terms of it's there. The title says what this film is, but it just doesn't pull it off.
Could have done more.
And that's the problem with it. And this is certainly, even if it did pull it off, I wouldn't be going to the cinema to see this film. But the fact it's on Netflix means, yeah, I can put it on. And if it was good, if it carried it all the way through, I'd be quite happy with that. And, you know, leave quite happily, but still... This concept, don't think it would have worked for me if the film carried off the promise of the first kind of 45 minutes. And when I say promise, I just mean better than I thought it was going to be based on the title. 2.6. Repeat viewing score. I sense this is where standards may fall.
Could be some diversion.
The mediocre standards might fall.
A division.
David, repeat viewing score.
Would I watch it again? Probably not immediately. But again, now,
so ridiculous.
You know, maybe I won't watch it tomorrow, having seen it yesterday. But would I? I must admit, back when I was at university, me and my friends used to meet up very regularly. We used to watch sort of old sort of monster films and horror films, and we'd enjoy them. There were ones that we may have seen them before. Things like, you know, not only just like the older sort of Hammer Horrors, but things like the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man and these nonsense films. absolute nonsense. And we would watch and really enjoy them. And on, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to put this back on very soon, but I think it is a film I might rewatch at some point and go, you know what, I generally found that quite fun. There will be a time when I go, what I want is something I can just sit down and watch people in period costumes with knives garrotting zombies, and there is only one film that's going to do that for me, and it will be this one, and I will probably enjoy it again. So I'm going to go for three.
Oh wow, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your defence of this film is
good. Great.
Will you be sitting next to him when he rewatches this?
I can't imagine really needing to watch it again soon. However,
if
my brother were to come round, I'd watch it with him.
Yes,
because we'd just yell at it.
That's it. There are people I'd like to watch this film with. Yeah.
So for that, I'll give it a two. I'd watch it again with my brother.
Yeah. I'll change the audience. I might not watch it alone.
But other than that, probably not.
Yeah.
Helen.
Five.
Surprising us.
Sorry, it's a zero.
Astonishing.
It's fair.
I'm going to go for a 0.5. Because...
It's 1 hour and 48 minutes. You're committing yourself to nearly 2 hours rewatching this when... There are other films out there you've not
half
seen.
Half of nearly 2 hours.
But the problem, it's just the fact that I know what you're saying with your brothers, and you'd like to see what their reaction is.
Exactly, it's a specific set of circumstances.
I don't think it's good enough to do that, because there are some films which you kind of think, guys, let's just watch this because it's daft as fuck. And I introduced my wife to The Room.
I was thinking of The Room, so this is.
And I can see what you're saying with
the costumes are nicer in this film.
Because it's not stupid enough to kind of say, guys, let's just put this film on.
Budget differences as well. I mean,
The Room?
Well, this and The Room, yeah.
No, but I'm saying this isn't stupid enough to say, let's just sit this, yeah. watch this yeah. film.
It's not Plan
it's
Nine.
Mm. It's not, yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, not, yeah, yeah. it's not stupid enough or daft enough to be like, let's watch this for a laugh, for me. And I can't see myself watching it again, but there might, you know, there might be some obtuse bit where I watch the first few minutes with someone and then go on to
realise what you're doing, yeah, and
no, and I'm going to leave. So that's where I get the 0.5 from. small screen score. No.
So, I mean, this is a tricky one.
Mm. It cuts both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's how well this works on a small screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, again, given that, if I'm going to go with my current argument, which I may as well stick with, which is that this might have been a less than mind-blowing viewing when you're sat by yourself in a cinema and not allowed to talk through it, but might do rather better with sat there with friends. I mean, I used to be, I haven't seen it for ages, but I used to be a big fan of Mystery Science Theatre 3000, where they would watch, you know, these terrible...
See, this is
which they brought back, of course, on Netflix.
They brought it back, but yeah. Why is each episode like 2 hours long? I've heard lots and lots about it, but each episode is like 2 hours long.
Yeah, it used to be 90 minutes, wasn't it? It was, well, I don't know. But it used to be 90 minutes.
I thought like a 30-minute.
No, it always used to be 90 minutes where they would watch an old film and maybe some shorts as well. And it used to be it was a fun sort of convivial show. But most of the films in there are genuine ones. If you watch by yourself, you go that. Oh, gee, I can't. Whereas this is a film, I think Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, you say it might not be bad enough. It's certainly not like Room standards of bad, remarkably bad. But I do think, I have seen The Room once. I don't think I'd watch it again, even with friends. Whereas this, I think, has enough to genuinely recommend it that I would watch it with friends for fun. So again, I'm going to stick to the mask. I'm going to go with a small screen score of 3 because I think Netflix is, and that kind of thing, watching Netflix is the perfect place to watch it, as opposed to, say, I'm not going to wait for the remaster cinema edition, but I do think watching it on something Netflix is the perfect place.
Beth?
Yeah, I was aware of this being released at the cinema. I'm perfectly happy that I didn't see it at the cinema. So I think watching it at home on a hungover Saturday with a person you love, if it's your kind of thing, is definitely the way to go, and I would also give it a 3.
Helen?
I would give it a 3, I'm not giving it any higher. I mean, yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, it's there. If you want to check it out, then it's there on Netflix in all its glory.
I'm going for 5 here.
Yes!
Because there's literally no reason to see this in the cinema.
Fair way of looking at it, yeah.
So the special effects aren't that good to warrant it being in the cinema. If I'd seen it in the cinema, I would be sorely disappointed.
But also, it's not like a lost classic waiting to be found.
No, exactly.
It can happily get hidden behind the real Pride and Prejudice.
Imagine if, let's say, like, there was some sort of apocalypse and the only film that survived was Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. How would we...
Then I just probably wouldn't watch films.
imagine a religion was based around it. An entire culture
There will be cultish people around there. But I mean... No one saw it.
I mean, cross-references. I think in this room, more people have seen it in this one instance than went to the cinema and seen it. It was a stinker.
But cross-reference that with The Room, which I've seen 3 times now.
What? Blimey.
I saw it once by myself.
How do you have the resolve?
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So I saw it once by myself. I thought it was too ridiculous. I knew exactly what was happening, but I couldn't actually believe as it unfolded it was as ridiculous as people said it was. Second time I watched it was The Disaster Artist came out.
I'd like to see it. Is that good?
Yeah, it's good. And
I'd really like to see it.
It's all right.
I saw it with I saw it at the Prince Charles with the Q&A.
Yeah, because they do those nights.
Yeah, so they did a Q&A with the Franco brothers after seeing The Disaster Artist, and then it led into The Room. Mm. And I have to say, watching The Room in a crowd full of people who know exactly what the film is the best experience I've had in the cinema for a long
time.
It was absolutely insanely hilarious. Yeah. And then the third time I watched it, it's because I knew my wife didn't know anything about it. I was just like, let's watch this film.
married?
He was still married. And I had to pause after 20 minutes.
Was it the night you got engaged?
It was, yeah. But she kept on looking at me saying, why are we watching this film? and I did it just purely to see what her reaction would be for me to say, this is let's watch this film because I've heard it's quite good. And I'll probably watch it again because I think it's really daft.
What?
Because it's honestly,
it's not iconic.
It's super daft.
I did say I got a couple of friends in Edinburgh, Stephen and Rick, in case they're listening to it, who did go to one of those live screening of The Room where there was a Q&A afterwards with Tommy Wiseau. Yeah, he was there, and they got the photos. They actually went to the film dressed up in sort of dinner jackets and bow ties to make a real occasional, and got a photo taken with him and the other guy who co-stars in it. And they said it was one of the finest evenings they ever had.
It genuinely is, and I've been to a few things at Prince Charles enjoyed all of them. But this was genuinely the funnest time I've had in the cinema for a while. So I do recommend it.
It's a shared viewing experience. Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's a knowing viewing experience. I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't go to watch it not having seen The Room.
Yeah.
But knowing it's what you're walking into, it's great fun. So this is not that.
No, sadly, no.
I mean, it would have been a completely different podcast
if film.
The Room was on Netflix, which it's not at the moment.
Engagement
score.
I mean... objectively, clearly, I'd have to give a low one because it's not engaged the people I'm even speaking to right now. Does it engage? Does it hold attention? It held my attention pretty damn well for an hour. The last 45 minutes, not quite so with it. Because I'm looking at this big screen of a spreadsheet on it, and I do like consistency. I'm going to go for three just to make it a consistent.
Three across the board.
Okay. Three across the board. I thought I'll give it that because I do think, again, my final word on it is just I generally think it does what it does fairly well. I didn't regret watching it. It's not the best endorsement, but I certainly came away from it going, I'm glad I've seen it. I think I've seen that film. I've had fun. I'll probably watch it with friends again in the future on Netflix or whichever, and that's what I wanted from it. So I did not come away from this film disappointed.
Yeah, I wanted to see it. I really enjoyed, as you say, the beginning. I think it is a bit long. I think I give it a 2.5.
Helen?
It's a Betty Davis expression there.
One.
Not zero.
I'm going 2.5 because it was half the film was quite fun, and then this was a this is quite boring now.
So what does that give?
So I want to know 2.38.
Now,
how does it compare to Sharknado 3? That's what I want to know.
So 2.38 is what we have. Beth wants to know
it must
Sharknado
be a bit
3.
Similar, I think.
Sharknado 3.
Maybe I was a bit more
2.1.
Oh yeah, so it beats Sharknado 3.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which is definitely right, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So, okay, guys.
Yeah.
Where are you on the internet? How can we find you? Where can we listen to your podcast?
We are Wooden Overcoats, which can be found on www.woodenovercoats.com or on Twitter @OvercoatsWooden or on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, numerous other places. If you type Wooden Overcoats in.
And you can find us on iTunes and all podcast catchers.
Cool. And we'll be linking to you guys in the show notes, so scroll down and click to find them.
We will do.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Cheers, guys. You were just listening to the latest episode of Flicks Watcher Podcast. Thank you to Brendan Russell for his sublime editing skills. Mighty people for the tunes you can hear right now. Please do come to iTunes and find us, like, subscribe, share with your friends. Find us on Twitter @FlicksWatcherPod and our website, flickswatcher.tv.